6000 for 10,000.
270, climb to 12,000, South 1063.
So I really want to see one of those things happen.
We're going to rely on the next Braden Point, Manny. That's what we're doing. We're getting the next Denver Barkey is the next Braden Point. I'll bet the mortgage on it.
Yeah. Don't they hold to fucking these goddamn assholes that spend all season long saying, oh, you know, Brink shouldn't be in the NHL. None of your prospects. They all suck. None of them should be in the NHL. And then they fucking sign Denver Barkey, and they're like, yeah, Denver Barkey's going to be a star. And I'm like, just fuck off. Fuck off.
Like, that's just a bonus. Like, you can't build your organization around that. If he works out, great. But you can't just reserve a spot for him to, oh, well, Barkey's coming as our one. So you got to be fucking kidding me. Like, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like... They shit on all their prospects while simultaneously pretending Michkov and Barkey are going to come in and save the day by themselves in a few years.
Ask any of those prospect gurus who the best player on the London Knights is. And if they say Denver Barkey, I'd say it's Easton Cowan. And I think it's, I'm not saying Barkey's bad at all. He's having a great year.
Sure.
But the other guys had a 30 something game point streak. And he's been lights out too. So, I mean, I don't know, this overvaluing stuff, we can't just be happy that they're having good seasons right now and then see what happens next year. Why do we automatically have to project that he's going to be a first line center, or he's going to be this, or he's going to be that, or he's going to be scoring 90 points in the NHL? The fact is that nobody knows. Nobody.
Because they Let's can overhype his junior career. And they can compare him to Claude Giroux Jr., and then they can hold on to that for dear fucking life when he gets to the NHL and puts up 33 points every season. And that's
I'm
just
so glad you did that.
Where
oh, my
at?
God, that's beautiful transition, Dan.
Because
that was so good.
This sumbitch just had a beautiful goal here against Boston, right through the fucking legs. 34 points on the season now. Here we are, yet the fuck again! Talking about Morgan Frost, I feel like every fucking 6 weeks we have to do a full episode on Morgan Frost because these dipshit assholes on Twitter just bow down to this guy for some fucking reason. Can anybody... Okay, listen. Where do we even fucking begin talking about this guy again? Listen, everybody. He's fine. Okay? He's fine. I was there in the building in his first NHL game. He's come a long fucking way in the last 5 years. 5 years! 5 years, and we're still pretending there's something there. If he was on Toronto, if he was playing between Marner and Nylander and sharing power play time with Matthews and Tavares, hey, you may be able to drag a point-per-game performance out of that guy. It's not gonna fucking happen on the Flyers! He's not capable of putting this team on his back and scoring. Every 3 weeks he'll have some beautiful fucking play like this goal. He's going to go quiet again. We're never going to hear from him. It's just, I don't understand this Bill Meltzer asshole. I don't know what the fuck. Does this guy owe him money? Is Frost in the process of getting a restraining order? Because even he's creeped out by how fucking weird this guy is.
It is very, very bizarre.
He put out a tweet the other day that says, dating back to December 9, 2022, Owen Tippett and Morgan Frost have identical point per game averages. They're the same age, bit consistent. One gets deemed a rising star. The other gets regarded as a draft bust. Like, okay, first of all, what a fucking weird December 9, 2022. I did the math on that one. That's 77 points. In about 120 games in an oddly specific 15-month stretch. First of all, 77 points. That's not even 82. That's not even a full fucking point per game pace yet. in 120 games in 15 months. What the fuck happened on December 8th that we can't talk about, by the way? Why December 9th? What a weird span. I don't know. I don't understand the hype for this guy. And the problem was, he's one of those guys that the last Hextall prospect that everyone put any stock into. He's going to be Claude Giroux Jr. He put up 2 points per game with the fucking Greyhounds in the OHL. And they just haven't been able to let that one go since. And he's still here, and we're still hyping up 5 years. Like, he's probably a perfectly fine middle six 50-point dude. And there's nothing wrong with that. But he's on a roster full of players that top out at random middle six 50-point dudes. There's nothing special about this guy. And we talk about him like he's there. And the Frost stands. At the beginning of the season, they had to tear down Forrester to put Frost over. Forrester should be sitting. He's not doing anything. Frost needs to be playing. And here we are taking shots at Owen Tippett now.
Yeah.
Why are, probably the truth, they're both overrated complementary pieces that don't have any game-changing talent around them to make a difference anyway. I just, like, why? Who gives a fuck about Morgan Frost? I can't fathom that this top, every fucking time I open Twitter, it's Morgan Frost, Morgan Frost, Morgan Frost, shut the fuck up! God!
Yeah, I think Frosty had that one nice, like, 5 second sequence against the Sharks the other week on the power play or something, where I forget he, like, halfway danced around one defenseman for a second. It's like, it's grasping at straws for things. And I think Dan kind of phrased it perfectly. It's like, look, this guy is a perfectly adequate supplemental player in the NHL when you have stars around him that, you know, can raise his game and bounce off of him, really, because he does have some skills for sure. But at the end of the day, it's like, look, and this just goes back to the Flyers are just not surrounding their players with the best top end talent they can. And you start with that. You don't start with the players that are in the middle or at the bottom. And that's what they're trying to do. And you see these guys struggling. I think Frost is a great example of that. Is like, look, this guy tops out at like 35 or 45 points every single year, because that's all he can do on his own without any help around him and playing with better players. And, you know, that's where you're going to get. And that's why we're seeing the stagnation. And, if the Flyers had started this rebuild appropriately a couple of years ago, you know, perhaps they get somebody on this team, some first liners where Frost can be better with on the power play and so on and so forth. As far as the fans go and as far as some of the beat writers go with their adulation for this guy, I think that there is, I think it just goes back to a level of desperation of saying, look, you know, this organization has taken so many punches over the past however many years on their missteps and just bad decisions, bad contracts, mismanagement. And it's just trying to hold on right. And I think that's all that is. And the fact that somebody like, you know, Mr. Bill Meltzer is just so adamant about it, it just reeks of severe desperation. And it's embarrassing. I mean, I think every time he comments on this guy, I think he embarrasses himself even further on it, honestly. So
hang on. The Skype ringer is on. I think Bill Meltzer is trying to get into our conversation here. Bill, go away. Yes, we're talking about Morgan Frost, and you're not invited. Stop.
He's got his notifications on. Shit.
Oh, yeah. He's totally on.
He just heard the name signal. Frost in the wind and had to come see what the hell was been going on.
Every day, he's been fighting fans, like, online.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yes. Like the last, like, 2-3 days, it's like he's gotten into, like, back and forths with multiple people. And it's like, I get where he's sort of coming from, because that San Jose Sharks game, people were shitting on Morgan Frost. And it was like, is Morgan Frost really the reason that they're having trouble barely beating the Sharks right now? The answer is no. And that's kind of where we've gotten to as fans too, where now he's taking an unrealistic amount of shit when he doesn't really deserve it, and getting blamed for things and outcomes that aren't really necessarily his own doing or his own fault. So I get that part of what Bill Meltzer is doing. At the same time, there was somebody who put up, you know, advanced stats comparing Morgan Frost to Artemi Panarin. And that's just freaking insulting. Like the level of thinking to compare like Artemi Panarin and Morgan Frost is ridiculous. The amount of people that I saw tweeting out video snippets of, look at Morgan Frost, he just deked past a player. If it was Connor Bedard, it would have been retweeted like 18,000 times. And it's like, yeah, Connor Bedard's a rookie. He's 18 years old. He's a first overall draft pick. He's a generational talent. And he's doing stuff at that age. And Morgan Frost is in his draft plus 6 year. And he, by the way, he's at 30. Well, I guess after tonight, 35 points.
Woo! Panarin has finished the four of the last five seasons with more than 90 points.
Oh, yeah, totally comparable.
93, 92, 96, 95.
That's why I don't like the advanced stats, is because you can pull up some sort of stat.
There's always a number for whatever narrative you want.
Two different people, no matter how ridiculous it is. And it's just stupid. It's just dumb. And that's not fair to Morgan Frost either. Like, that whole thing of living up to the Claude Giroux Jr. thing or whatever, and the 200-point pace in Jr. or whatever it was, like, that's not fair to the player, and I don't like it when people compare and put, this guy's the next blank. I hate it when they do that on draft shows, because it just puts a stupid, unrealistic expectation, and you don't let these guys develop the way they're supposed to. I think the truth is in the middle. He takes a lot of shit, Morgan Frost does, when it's not really his fault. And number two, people, the second that he gets an assist or gets a zone entry, people are just slobbering all over the TV.
Nobody would
screen.
Take shit if people weren't so fucking hard on for the guy all the time. If Meltzer wasn't so goddamn crazy and we just accepted the guy as a middle 650 point guy, who fucking cares? He's part of this team, just like every other dude, just like Joel right. Farabee, who would just exist in the woodwork. It's the fact that they're fucking on their a fucking 35 point player. That's nuts. That's fucking crazy. Who cares about Morgan fucking Frost? I want better players. I want players that are going to score 90 points. Nathan MacKinnon is like 120 points right now. I want that on my team. Give me a few of those players. Where are they? Why can't I fucking look over good players? Why are we here dropping 35 fucking points?
And I love the excuse on that, Dan, too. It's like, oh, well, they're so hard to get. I'm like, yeah, but like, let's go down the list. I mean, there's like a lot of teams that have players or have had players of that caliber over the past like decade plus. I mean, the Avalanche, the Oilers, the Leafs, the Lightning.
How did they get them? Through fucking drafting, because they rebuilt the right way.
Like, there's enough teams out there that have those kind of players where it doesn't seem like, we just can't do that. Oh, well, we're just paralyzed from doing that. We're immunized from obtaining a player of that caliber. We can't do that. It's too hard. I'm like, I'm so sick of hearing the lapdog say that. Well, it's so hard to do that. I'm like, I'm fucking sick of it, dude. It's like, dude, I'm not paying for this fucking shit anymore. I'm not getting season tickets to see fucking some middle six, 33-point Sean Couturier fucking do whatever the hell he's going to do. I am so sick of that rhetoric from these people. If you want to say that stuff for like a couple of years while the organization's going through a transition, I can understand that. But I've been hearing that fucking shit for like 14 years now.
Yep.
And I am so sick of it. I am so beyond sick of them trying to justify that the Flyers don't need, or it's too hard or too difficult, therefore it's okay what they're doing, to not obtain any players of that caliber and just constantly nibble around the edges when it comes to talent on the roster. I cannot stand it anymore. It is so bad. I think it's embarrassing for people. There's so many beat writers that are just sucking the teat of the Flyers and just trying to say that, oh, yeah, this is fine, that's fine, and, you know, justifying it all. I can't take them seriously. Yeah. They sound like just complete lapdog morons to me. So yeah, that really strikes a chord when you mention something like that, as if the Flyers are not allowed to participate with players of that caliber.
I'm just looking at the NHL stats right now. So Frost is at 35 points. Now, it was in 56 games. So pretty much everybody above and below him is at about 65, 66 games. So let's even be generous and give him an extra 5 points. So at 39 points, wow, Ivan Barbashev is at 38 points. Oh, boy. Nicholas Paul is at 37 points. Wow.
Hey, where's our 1C Coots? Kucherov!
He's at 36 points.
Wow. Oh, man, dude. He's just rocking and rolling. Coots is such a rocker.
Earning that $8 million a year.
Yeah. Look at oh, my God, he bounced back so great. Ah.
Yeah, I know another guy that everybody just slobbered.
And now it's
over.
Like, now that he fucking sucks and he can't just like, oh, well, he was just trying too hard for the first couple of months. He's just coming off the surgery. It's like, dude, no matter what he does, you fucking people will justify it. If he's great, you're like, see, I told you so. If he's not great, he's still injured. It's like, fuck you. You are a bunch of idiots.
By the way, James Van Riemsdyk has 38 points. So he's got more points than freaking Frost and Couturier. Let's tweet that out tomorrow and see what kind of reaction we get.
Dude, that is such a great stat. That's such a great stat. JVR, who was just kind of like skating circles out there during his time as a Flyer, like barely participating in the game of hockey, is now just dominating all the points in terms of his comparison to what the Flyers players are doing.
Ryan Hartman, 38 points ahead of both of those two. Our top two centers, by the way. Phil Deneau, defensive specialist, 39 points. I mean, the hits just keep on coming. Kyle Palmieri.
Yeah, yeah, but the difference is that our guys that have those point totals in the 30s are indispensable. You know, they do so much more. Their value is intrinsic in other ways.
Yeah, it's culture. They're leaders.
It's just like, dude, the justification of these 30-some point guys, we're fucking mid-March. I mean, get the fuck out of here with this shit.
like both things can be true. Like, I'm sorry, it's disappointing that Morgan Frost is at 35 points. It is. It just is. I expected him to be a 65-ish point guy in the NHL. I really did. He's at 35 points. Like, I'm sorry, that's bad. But at the same time, every time that this team loses, Morgan Frost sucks. I can't believe they still have this guy. He's terrible. And then Bill Meltzer swoops in. He takes the bait. And he just goes and he rockets off these stats. Well, he does things that other players on this team can't do. Well, that's because this team is made up of like the fucking Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
Like
they're all can't do players.
Like it's indicative of the talent level of this team. Granted, I don't think you could trade this guy because they've got nothing at the center position. Mm-hmm. Like, is that a guy that you expect to be here next year?
That was, God, that's another fucking aspect of this Frost thing. There was a Meltzer tweet where he was like, he's the best center on the team and in the organization right now. My thought is, I mean, that's technically true, but let's talk about his competition. A 31-year-old broken down Sean Couturier, a 30-year-old broken down Scott Laughton, whatever the fuck it is Ryan Poehling does these days, and Elliot Desnoyer, who hasn't scored since Christ was a fucking cowboy. Like, there's no center depth here. So, yeah, by default, he's there. By default, he's one of the most talented teams on the players in terms of pure raw skill. That's not saying Frost is good. That's talking about how fucking shit the rest of this team is.
Yeah, it shouldn't preclude you from moving him. I mean, that is such a ridiculous justification.
He's like, got to be the
one to
go.
He's the best one in the organization.
He's
got
to be. They just named Couturier captain. They just re-signed Poehling. Lawton clearly fucking isn't going anywhere. We just talked about that. if they want to upgrade at center, which is a big if, because fucking Christ knows they probably don't want to. If they wanted to add a center, Frost is the one to go. He's got to be the one to go, because he's the only one that makes sense to go. I don't know if they actually do it or not. They could always fucking move Noah Cates back to C, I guess. But I don't know.
Yeah, they might do that. But still, it's like, I mean, ridiculous. That doesn't move the needle in any way whatsoever. Noah Cates is a passable depth player on a good team. That's it. That's all.
He almost won a Selke last year, Mike.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the Selke running. I forgot about that. That's the only award that our players are eligible for because they suck at everything else.
Yeah.
So
by almost win a Selke, like, where did he fit in the voting? 12th?
I don't remember. 40th?
Yeah, I know. Like, what was the actual? I think it was higher than that, but.
Yeah, it was somewhere, I don't know, maybe 18th or something. Or he got a couple of, like, third place votes, maybe, which was. Still outrageous, but yeah, the tort system can really do wonders. But yeah,
Noah Cates was 15th in Selke voting.
Wow, God, that's ridiculous.
But he almost won the Selke. He finished 15th.
He got 1 second, 1 third, and 1 fourth place vote.
God, dude, imagine like the level of I cannot imagine some of these people that comment on the flyers, like some of the beat reporters and stuff and some of the other folks. Like if you like work with them, like imagine trying to get a level of analysis from them on something that's not the flyers and trusting it. Like, dear Lord, like to ruin your business in 3 seconds. So they look at some freaking chart, you know, I don't know, some sales are down by 50%, and they all of a sudden say, well, you know, they have some bullshit. Sales are actually forecast to go up by 20% next year or something. It's like, okay, well, like, you're lying to me. They're down 50 fucking percent. Like, just tell me that.
So
the Selke is voted by the media, right?
Yes.
So let me guess, the second place vote, what are the odds it was Bill Meltzer who put that 1 second place vote?
I don't know.
I don't think reveal it.
Was it Jim Jackson?
God, JJ.
Who else was it?
It was one of the analytic geeks, probably.
It was Charlie O'Connor.
That's possible.
So the 1 second place, the 1 third place, the 1 fourth place is basically the three flyer guys.
Probably.
Yeah, like essentially.
More than likely.
That's what it is, right? But he almost won.
Yeah.
Finished 15th. Yeah. He almost won.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I'm not. I think that the discussion over Morgan Frost is obviously excessive, and I think his value to the team is fine. I mean, nothing that special. Nothing. He's not irrelevant. I think he's helpful to have, but I'm not going to be, you know, defending him to the death or expecting him to all of a sudden turn into a point per game type of player. I just don't think that's the realm of possibility here, given what they have. And it's just so funny. It's just like all the analysis on this is just like, he's like the most elite and talented player that Flyers discussion is about, you know, like, how sad is that?
Yeah.
That is so fucking depressing.
That's pretty much how I see it as well. It's just like, this is the guy we're getting on the cross for, Morgan fucking Frost.
I wrote this question in the chat and I'd like to hear what your thoughts are. Is Morgan Frost a guy that's beneficial to this rebuild or is he a detriment? Like, would they be better served to just rip off the Band-Aid and say, you know what? You're out. You were a Hextall pick. It doesn't even matter. That was two GMs ago. We don't even care. We don't want you anymore. See you. And fully allow this team to regress and get a higher draft pick. Because I do think that he is making some of the guys around him a little bit better.
Interesting.
But at the same time, they're not good enough to bring him to the point where he's a legit, you know, 55, 60-point guy. Instead, we're talking about a 35-point guy. So is he actually helping this team exceed expectations? Or is he part of the solution or is he part of the problem?
I don't know if he's either. That may be the bigger issue at hand. I don't think he's hurting the team. But they don't have enough talent to make something out of the guy. but he's not actively detracting most nights anymore. Like, he has come along decently enough. Like, and this is, you know, I'll give him credit for this one. Like, his two-way game has improved tremendously compared to what it was, you know, during his rookie season earlier in his career. So I don't think he's hurting the team, but he's not really helping either. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just by default, because the team is built so shittily, he's one of the few talented players you got, but he's hamstrung because there's nobody else to build around. You know, if you brought in two or three other players that had offensive talent and played Frost with them, like we used the Toronto analogy earlier, if you dropped them on Toronto, you could probably be a decent beneficiary player. But I don't know if he's really helping or hurting the Flyers, right? He just kind of exists. You know, I still think Tortorella probably doesn't trust this guy fully, certainly not like he does with some of these other guys in this team. But I don't know. I just think it's just he's too mediocre, which is, you know, what you can say about a lot of these guys. Joel Farabee's in the same boat, too. It's like he just exists. You know, he's not really helping the team. He's not putting them on their back and leading them and being a superstar, but he's not hurting them being a, you know, middle six, 50-point guy. They just exist. There's just too many of the same thing here, and nobody to lead these assholes. And that's that. That's the bigger problem, is just the complete lack of team building, the roster building from the front office to make the most out of a player like Morgan Frost, to see if you can get him to be a 65-point guy, let alone a fucking point-per-game guy. You know, it's just, even Konechny, this guy just exists, 60 points. Woohoo. Who cares? You know, you just don't have a single person on this forward group that makes a difference, and Frost falls right into that, you know, trap just like everybody else does.
Yeah, I mean, my initial reaction, it's a good question, is that I would probably defer on the side of, I think he, I'm fine with him being here. Like, I have no issue with him being a part of the team in the future. I think he's still potentially young enough and still has enough upside where I'm fine with him being here. I don't think that he is going to be one of the leaders or going to be a substantial solution at all. But I think that it's, I think he's potentially worth keeping around. But that's not saying too much. I'm not, you know, all that much invested in him. And I think that's part of the larger issue that, you know, you kind of mentioned, Dan, was the kind of like the duplication of players and the way that they're kind of all performing in the same way. And they're kind of all interchangeable pieces, part of the same engine here. And I think that some of that is the type of players that are here. And I think some of that is the way that John Tortorella coaches the team, in that, you know, okay, player A, player B, and player C are supposed to do the exact same thing. And if they don't, then they're out of the lineup. And it doesn't account for the strengths and weaknesses that player A, B, and C have. You know, I could probably do an essay on this if I did a deeper dive with Torts, but kind of in the same way in Columbus as well. But I think that's what he does, is as a coach, he creates this mirror image of players where they do exactly what they're supposed to be doing, each and every one of them in the exact same way in every situation. And that in turn allows the team to operate in a cohesive manner, which is important. But at the end of the day, you need to play to some of your players' strengths. And I'm not sure that his system really does that, nor do I think the Flyers have players that have enough strengths to be played to anyway. But I think that there's a combination here of players that are not mere images, but have the same types of ceiling, and also a coach that I think is trying to utilize them as interchangeable parts in a way that doesn't allow for some of these guys' talents to really show at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Is that a guy? See, I don't know. I think if there's anybody that's going to be traded, I could see Joel Farabee getting moved this offseason.
What do you think for?
That's a hell of a question. It would probably be to really jump up the draft charts this draft. And maybe, but I don't know. I mean, if I'm a team, do I want to trade a center for Joel Farabee? Not really. But he's young enough, and he does show flashes here and there of being a good player, but there's something about him that I don't like. And
I think he was really poisoned by the prior regime too.
And I've never really, to be fair, liked Joel Farabee all that much.
Me neither.
But I don't know. That's a prime candidate of, you know what? I might not be able to get rid of all the pieces that I don't like on this team, but if you can get rid of one, that would go a large way, especially if it's to get a center. That would go a long way to really pulling me back in and at least seeing that that at least they are going to give me something here.
He's got 4 years left at $5 million AAV. So it's a fairly hefty move.
He's got a new career high in goals. He's up to 48 points after tonight, I think. So, I mean, he's clearly, he's still young. He's, what, 24? Yeah, 24. Mm. Just turned 24 last month. I mean, I think he's finally got over it. You know, he had the neck surgery last year, which I think limited him, despite the fact that he played every single game. He had all those injuries for the previous few years there. And we got the, you know, yo-yo treatment in 1920 with the development being fucked. So, I don't know. If you're trading anybody, and again, we can go down the lineup here. They're not going to move Coots. Atkinson should go, but I don't believe for a second they actually do anything. If they're going to do anything, it's going to have to be a buyout.
His value is just so bad. That's the thing. It's been horrendous.
Pretty much worthless. Konechny's probably getting re-signed. You know, Lawton's clearly staying. Cates isn't going anywhere. Hathaway is not going anywhere. Delorier is not going anywhere. Mainly because he's got fucking trade protection. They just re-signed Tippett. They re-signed Poehling. They clearly have somewhat there with Forrester. He's not going anywhere. And that leaves Farabee and Frost as your only two upfront options to trade, essentially. And I don't know. I don't know if one of them is more likely to get moved than the other. I still think, like, Frost clearly does not have the full trust of Tortorella, which could play into a potential move there. But,
And that move is, I mean, what are you going to get for him? I mean, I think that it's potentially a big subtraction for the Flyers, given his
25-year-old, 35-point guy. Like, what value-wise does he have? Yeah, you're not going to get anything.
That's going to be... Again, that trade would be like a nibbling around the edges type of move. Doesn't move the needle at all.
They could probably get a good two-way guy out of that. And a good character guy. Help the culture.
Yeah, a good two-way, Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah. Yes. They're going to get a great 200-foot player.
We need a Nick Delorier 3.0 in this lineup.
Yeah. And then, I mean...
Farabee should have some trade value, like positive trade value. Maybe.
I think so, but the contract's going to be a big issue.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. That's four years at $5 million, especially in this economy. It's fucking terrible.
Yeah, so I think they're hamstrung on both of those guys. Whereas with Frost, the return is immaterial. And with Farabee, maybe you get a better return, but his term on his contract is so bad. Well, not bad, but it's going to be very, very difficult. Your trade partners are going to be highly limited.
Yeah.
Based upon that. So, you know, you're hamstrung on both of those guys.
They would just be getting another roster player back that's of similar ceiling as Farabee. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which leads back.
The fucking purpose in the first place.
This all leads back to figuring out your roster via the top
rearranging the deck chairs of, hey, we're going to get rid of Frost and Farabee for a Frost and Farabee clone. Two middle six 50-point guys.
Right. You're not getting Trevor Zegras for Morgan Frost. Like,
probably not.
It's not happening. Like,
we just got Jonathan Drouin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it, man. It's just, these are just deck chairs. They're fucking deck chairs right now.
Oh, but you guys, Jonathan Drouin was a third overall pick in the NHL draft years ago. Oh, boy, this could be a real change of scenery that he needs to be the superstar that everything he wanted. Danny Briere's cooking. He's doing the right thing here. He's really going to take a chance on the guy.
Jonathan Drouin's still in the NHL.
He is. He's playing for Colorado, and he has more points than Morgan.
He does. He's got 38
incredible.
Points.
Oh, I mean, that's incredible. Yeah. That's a great pull again.
Oh, God.
Since we're in a jovial mood, did you guys hear the latest?
Jovial? Is that what you said?
A jovial mood.
A jovial with Farabee reference.
A jovial mood. I heard a great story on 32 Thoughts. Did you guys hear the latest episode from Friday?
No,
I didn't hear it yet.
So they do a segment where fans can call in and ask questions or email them questions. And one guy wrote and asked the question. He goes, now that the trade deadline's gone, What is future considerations? What does that even mean? Like, you heard that term a lot, and like, do teams actually like show people like, hey, this was what the future considerations turned out to be? And do you guys have any interesting stories? So Elliot Friedman said that future considerations can really mean anything. And he told a story that Mark Stahl, you know, our Mark Stahl, yeah, our indispensable defenseman that we had to sign.
The Mark Stahl
was traded from the New York Rangers with a second round pick to the Detroit Red Wings. I want to say in 2020. And it was done in exchange for future considerations. And Elliot Friedman said that the future considerations ended up being nothing. Literally nothing. The Rangers just basically said, here's a second round pick. Here's Mark Stahl. Fucking take him. And it's for future considerations.
Wait a second.
And the Detroit Red Wings did not give the Rangers anything in exchange for that deal.
That it can't be consideration. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a bizarre topic. Absolutely crazy topic. I thought that there was, I never really drilled down on what that meant. I thought that it had something to do with financial withholding or something, or when there's a trade, a team will, withhold money or something. I don't know. That's just kind of my instinct on it, but that doesn't make sense either.
There's some follow up. I wrote when I was writing the trade history pieces, last summer, something you encounter quite a bit where, future considerations and okay, well, what the fuck is this? Sometimes it's a draft pick that gets thrown in down the line. Sometimes it's, considerations for a future trade of like, hey, you washed our back, let's wash yours kind of thing. And other times there's apparently no follow-up on it, no feasible follow-up anyway, that kind of comes out publicly. So yeah, it's really one of those moves that just, it really means whatever the hell you want it to mean.
God, that's weird. So it's like, it's like a goodwill thing. It's like, hey, when we deal again, I may have a sense of goodwill when I deal with you. Like, that's essentially it.
Yeah.
Well, like, usually the expectation would be like Detroit would call up the Rangers and be like, hey, you got like a sixth round pick here, and there's a guy that we really want. So give us your sixth round pick. And the Mark Stahl deal is like, we're good.
Yeah.
But it's like literally the Rangers just said, hey, you're doing us a favor. He'll go to you guys, and we already talked to him. He'd play in Detroit. So here's a second round pick in addition to Mark Stahl. Give us something in the future. And it turns out that like they never called Detroit back, and Detroit never called the Rangers and said, hey, let's square the deal and let's make something happen. He was literally traded for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Zero.
Like Shane Gossett.
That's like against the principles of contract law. I mean, it really is consideration is an element of creating a valid contract. And if your consideration is something that's indeterminable in the future, that's not a valid contract. But sports leagues work that way, I guess, but it just doesn't make sense with how how a transaction would normally go, because it's essentially saying in the future, I will agree to deal in good faith with you. Essentially, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that's not consideration. That's just nothing. But that's allowed in sports, which is bizarre.
I just thought it was a hilarious story because people legitimately thought we were going to get a second round pick with for this guy, and he was literally traded for nothing
4 years ago. Yeah,
for nothing. Here.
Yeah. It's funny how the Flyers, they value that kind of player as, up here on the scale, so to speak. And the rest of the league is like, what the fuck are you talking about? This is worthless shit. Yeah, well, he's part of the playoff push now, so.
Yeah, he's playing every night now.
How are you on that?
It's probably a big reason why they're losing a lot of these games, because Mark Stahl's playing every night, but,
It's, yeah, just kind of painful.
Yeah.
Man, he's looking rough, man.
Looks like he just walked out of the woods like he was lost for 20 years and came back. And what's going on, guy? It's like fucking Robin Williams in Jumanji.
Yeah, he looks like he makes his own moonshine up in the hills in Kentucky.